You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
All right, joining me now on the line, Jim Wilson. He's the president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation. Jim, welcome back to Zoomer Radio.
Thank you.
We were talking the other day about vaccinations against Lyme disease and essentially noting the fact that if you're a dog or a cat, you have a better chance at getting a vaccine than if you're a human being. Could you bring us up to date on what vaccines are available in the world and what might be available through some method or other for people who live in Canada?
Well, there aren't any options right now for
none, really, right?
Right. And there's many reasons for that. There was a vaccine on the market in the late 90s and was withdrawn in 2002.
You're talking about Lymerix in the U.S., right?
Yeah. And at the time, there were quite a number of people who were adversely affected by the vaccine in that it caused a rather severe form of arthritis, rheumatism-type response. And the so they had a great deal of difficulty with it. They withdrew it after, I think, about 1.5 million doses given out.
And nothing at all has replaced it or is even in the pipeline, right?
Well, there are companies working on various vaccines in the United States and Europe. However, I don't expect to see an effective Lyme vaccine in my lifetime.
Really?
It's a very, very complex organism.
Yeah.
We have multiple strains and species. It tends to be shifting its genetic makeup, so that, you know, if you figure you targeted one thing, that may not be what pops up in the next region.
In other words, a vaccine, at least under current medical knowledge, doesn't seem all that likely anytime soon, I guess, is really what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. I'm not optimistic that there will be an effective vaccine.
We had callers who were talking in one case about relatives they had some in a country somewhere in Europe, perhaps it was Sweden, I think, who said that, routinely every year the doctor gives members of our family in Sweden a vaccination against Lyme disease, but they must be mistaken, I'm thinking. Would that be your thought on that?
Well, there's a vaccine in Europe against tick-borne encephalitis. And I frequently hear that being referred to as a Lyme disease vaccine.
Well, is it or not?
It's not.
It's not, eh?
Right. There's tick-borne encephalitis is a different organism than the Lyme bacteria.
It is not Borrelia burgdorferi, or however you pronounce it. It isn't that one. Okay. Is tick-borne encephalitis an additional problem, a complicating problem here in North America, in Canada?
Not as of yet.
Not as of yet, but that...
We can't say for sure that it's not going to occur here, but right now it doesn't seem to be an issue.
By the same token, do we know in the converse that the Lyme disease bacterium is infecting ticks in Europe? Is it there?
Yes, it is.
It is there. Yeah.
They have actually three distinct Borrelia bacteria causing Lyme disease. They have some of the Borrelia burgdorferi, but they also have more commonly Borrelia afcelli and Borrelia garinii as the major Lyme disease causing bacteria.
So then they're in the same boat that we are in Canada, at least from a vaccination point of view.
Yes.
There's no protection at all. But what about the treatment? Bring us up to date on treatment prospects for those with Lyme disease, suffering from the long-term effects of Lyme disease here in Canada.
It's virtually impossible in Canada to get appropriate treatment for chronic Lyme disease. It's there's a great amount of misinformation being given to doctors by other doctors as regards to the prevalence of Lyme disease and as to the existence, the very existence that chronic Lyme disease is an actual medical entity.
Talk to people who've become infected by walking through Rondeau Park in Ontario, for example, or other parts of Ontario, other parts of the whole country.
Well, exactly. I mean, we frequently, when you'll see government news media pieces on Lyme disease, they're frequently followed or included with comments about high risk, low risk, endemic areas that are, you know, where you're more likely to get Lyme and other areas where you're less likely to get Lyme. And we feel that discussion kind of takes away from the fact that this is a randomly spread problem because it's our migratory birds that are moving these ticks around in the tens of millions each season. So you can't safely say that anywhere in Canada that a robin flies, for example, that you can't get Lyme disease.
And is it not fair to say, I remember reading this report a number of weeks ago saying, at least one researcher was saying, because of the general warming of the climate, here in Canada, I guess somebody was talking about our unusual winter, there's more probability that the deer tick infected with a Borrelia bacterium, for example, that they'd be more prevalent in Canada, in Ontario.
That is certainly a common theory put forward, that the global warming is causing an increase in the range of this tick. So, but there's others that say, no, this is just the natural progression of the tick. And this would have occurred with or without global warming because the increase in the average temperature is quite minuscule when you consider what temperatures these ticks are comfortable in.
Yeah.
So they're comfortable and survive quite well in Finland, for example.
So they're tough little buggers.
Cool.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Is there no good news to report on the fight against Lyme disease, Jim?
I would say there is more discussion at the academic level in medicine now than there has been in the past.
Yeah.
And this past March 19th, there was a good symposium at the University of Manitoba Faculty of Medicine that was instigated by Dr. Redwood Mock-Bell, who's head of immunology at Faculty of Medicine there. He's on our board of directors. We brought in experts from throughout North America, including Canada. And the discussion was very open and very broad, and they discussed chronic Lyme disease. They discussed the animal research that has repeatedly shown that it's extremely erroneous to be ignoring chronic Lyme disease because every research, whether it's in a mouse or a dog or a horse or the latest published research was from the human's closest relative, the rhesus monkey.
Yeah.
And even after 3 months of antibiotics, they are still able to recover the live Borrelia bacteria from from these treated animals.
So even with, and that's a bottom line here that is always drawn, I think, in cases like this. It may be that even with the best treatment available, with the incredibly powerful antibiotics, it may well be that the Lyme disease cannot be defeated in a long-term patient.
Well, we...
Or can you say that? I don't know.
We can't really say that. What we can say is we are hesitant to say cured.
Yeah.
But what we do see is a dramatic improvement in the quality of life for treatment that goes beyond 3 months. So it's not uncommon for late Lyme disease patients to require 9 months or more of antibiotics. And Lyme is not alone. There's several diseases that require long-term antibiotics.
But it's not that the long-term antibiotics, these powerful antibiotics, are not available. It's that many doctors will not prescribe them for Lyme disease. Isn't that the problem?
Exactly. Yeah. In Canada, it's an absolute no-no. The doctors aren't even allowed to really consider chronic Lyme disease as a diagnosis.
In fact, they get into trouble if they try to do that, don't they?
They do.
If you have a comment or a question for Jim Wilson, who's the president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation, now is the time to call 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Jim Wilson is here. He's the president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation, talking about Lyme disease and the current fight against Lyme disease, which does not seem to be going that well. So, Jim, in a few words, the problem is if you suspect somehow that you have Lyme disease in Canada, the chances of you finding effective treatment in Canada are slim to nil, are they not?
Well, they're... You know, having said that, generally, yes, but because the discussion is being had now at the academic level, unlike before, there are a number of physicians quietly treating individual patients for chronic Lyme disease, but they're just not putting their names forward.
Well, I understand why, don't you? Of course.
Oh, absolutely. But there are an ever-increasing number of physicians now who have done their homework, read the research, and are not buying into this chronic Lyme disease doesn't exist argument, because the evidence is just far too much in favor of the reality.
Well, right. And in a lot of cases, I mean, people who like being out in the woods, like camping or whatever, this strikes a lot of fear into a lot of people if you get bitten by one of these things, and your worry is that a doctor might not be able to diagnose it, or will downplay it, or totally ignore you. It doesn't put that confident feeling into the mind of a person who might have been bitten by one of these things.
No, and unfortunately, we're still at that early stage of acceptance of the reality here. So,
even though people have been suffering from Lyme disease for many years.
Many years. I mean, this is not a new bacteria.
No.
I mean, if they found it in the 5,000-year-old Iceman using DNA technology, then, this is not new to North America. It's been here, albeit in lesser numbers, but it's not new. And also, we have to ask ourselves, why is the Borrelia... DNA showing up so frequently in the brains of people with dementia?
Well,
and it's not just Borrelia spirochetes, it's other spirochetes.
A very good friend of mine.
This is so rare. How is it showing up in these high percentages of the hundreds of thousands of people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia.
Well, in fact, that's happened to a very good friend of mine, Marilyn Truscott, who for years thought she had Alzheimer's disease and now is being treated quietly for Lyme disease.
Yes.
Here's Bruce calling from Richmond Hill. Bruce, do you have a question for Jim Wilson?
I have a comment and a question.
All right.
The first comment is you've been talking about ticks. It's quite conceivable that you can also get it from a mosquito bite, which I think in my case is true. And my question pertains to why does Ontario and Canada continue to use the least reliable test to determine whether or not you have Lyme disease?
All right. Let's Jim Wilson, comment on those things, please.
To start with, the mosquito, it's been known for many years that certain species of mosquitoes can carry the Lyme bacteria in their gut. What has been difficult to show is that they're an effective transmitter of the disease. When the mosquito lacks a certain enzyme in the gut fluid, and why that's important is the spirochete, when it's in the host other than humans, has to go through a process of changing its outer surface proteins to survive in the human blood.
Okay, so you can't draw as solid a line with a mosquito as you can with a tick. But comment on Bruce's other point about the test for Lyme disease.
The tests for Lyme disease are horribly inaccurate. We're looking for in most provincial and federal labs just Borrelia burgdorferi strain B31, because that's what the U.S. government has mandated the kit manufacturers for the standard ELISA and the Western blots. That's all they're allowed to include as the basis of their test kits.
But as you said earlier, there are other Borrelium that could also be there.
That's exactly the problem. I mean, we know, and it's published, that in Canada we have quite a wide diversity of strains and species. So we may be testing for strain Borrelia burgdorferi B31, which is from the eastern seaboard of the United States, but that's not going to apply in southern Ontario or southern Quebec, perhaps as much as if we included a test that would look, for example, for Borrelia miyamotoi or Borrelia bassettii or Borrelia curtinbachii or Borrelia andersoni. And there's just so many of them, and there's just absolutely no evidence to support that the present testing that we use is picking up that wider diversity of strains and species.
If you can even find it.
For a second, my point is that Canada and Ontario continues to use the ELISA test as the frontline test. And if you don't test positive for that, you don't get a Western blot. Fact of the matter is, there are more reliable and more effective testing. So sure, you're always going to miss somebody. But Ontario is using the worst possible test to test for Lyme.
Well, yes, they are. I mean, it's an inadequate test. Period.
All right.
There's not. It's not going to pick up the diversity, and so you're more likely, in our experience, to test negative, but still have the disease, than you are going to test positive.
Like
Bruce, thanks for your call. I got to move along. I want to get some other people involved in the conversation here. Here's Ed calling from Hamilton. Ed, you have a comment or question?
Hi, Jim Wilson, Dale. Yes, I have a problem in that my wife and I spent a lot of time in North Carolina and Florida. Late 70s, early 80s, I got bitten by something. Bullseye thing came up.
Yeah.
Back in Canada, my doctor treated me for Lyme disease.
Yeah.
With a couple of antibiotics, okay? He was aware of it, and
that's good.
Things were long. But beyond that, in the late 80s, I developed MS.
Right.
And I'm just wondering.
Well, I don't know if you can. I mean, no, Jim Wilson isn't a doctor. Certainly, neither am I. I don't know if you heard any reports of that, Jim Wilson?
Well, one thing we do know is that we have a number of people across Canada and in the United States who had previously been diagnosed with MS, only to find out it was Lyme disease.
Yeah.
The symptoms of MS pretty much mirror those of late-stage Lyme disease.
Yeah,
so
but it's
indistinguishable.
True enough, as far as the symptoms are concerned, but it does not mean that Borrelia caused MS. It just means the symptoms are similar.
Right, and,
yeah,
and
okay.
There much more research needs to be done. There is a lot of research going back into I think the earliest research I've read was 1911, where they were able to identify the spirochetal bacteria in multiple sclerosis.
Yeah.
So we don't know if it's a trigger, if it's a cause, but we do know because of the crossover of symptoms that there is a considerable amount of misdiagnosis. We don't know what the percentage is.
Yeah. All right, Ed, thanks very much. Let me try to get one last quick call from Gloria. Gloria, do you have a question for Jim Wilson?
Yes. I have been treated with an antibiotic called doxycycline last year when I had a tick bite. My doctor had me on it for 3 months with the blood test testing positive. Now, I'm just wondering, I'm trying to do a follow-up because I am being concerned because there's different parts of my body that are starting to that aren't normal for my age anyhow. Like I'm getting pains and then they disappear and then I get numbness. So I don't know. I'm trying to get a hold of my doctor to get back in, but I'm having a difficult time. I was bitten by a tick, which I was raking, and I went to the urgent care the next morning and said, I have something eating my body. I was out of my mind. And they took a look at it. The nurse said it was a tick. The doctor came in and removed it. He didn't quite know what it was and threw it in the garbage.
Oh,
needless to say, the tick had got to be about the size of the end of my baby finger. It had sucked enough out.
Yeah.
But I am not aware of ticks now. I'm trying
Gloria,
to...
I'm running out of time, and
okay.
I want Jim Wilson to give you a little bit of advice here. It won't be medical necessarily, but please hang on and listen. That's Gloria in Toronto. What can you say, Jim Wilson, to Gloria?
That, yes, she's one of those people who needs a real thorough investigation, and it should go far beyond simply the ELISA screening test.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to get that done. We have other tests. There's PCR. She can contact CanLyme later. And we can discuss her options with her.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Jim Wilson, very much for spending time once again with us here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jim Wilson is president of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.